TV Corner.
Hey guys, welcome to the last Filmcore TV Corner Game of Thrones podcast. This is season 8, episode 6, The Iron Throne. With me, I have Greg.
Hey, how are you?
And there's been a lot of mixed feelings about this finale, but I think it's important, maybe since I feel like the carcass has been sort of picked over, that we just sort of focus maybe on the positives.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, like, as I was kind of going over everything today, for one thing, I was really surprised by how much I was thinking about it, given how bad the last couple seasons have been, really. And I mean, just really, like, especially not, I'm not really a spectacle kind of person, so when I see that a show is now more interested in flexing its muscles, I just turn off. And so the sadness, and I mean, I think the reason people get upset about something they love, like a show like this, is because you know what it can be, right? So it's like,
yeah,
like the failed potential. And what's so frustrating about it is that you have all these things that kind of make sense, like with just, you know, like I like what they were trying to say, you know what I mean? I like what they were trying to go with it. But an unearned ending place in a TV show, unfortunately, like it does matter how you get there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it shows like how you can have sort of all of the plot points you have to hit, but if you don't create a story that's compelling and delivered in a way that's interesting, then it doesn't matter and everything just feels flat and forced.
Yeah.
And it's something that Game of Thrones managed to avoid for so long. You know, it was super dynamic. Everything was so well written. It really took its time, and that was great.
Yeah, but I, you know, like, as I was saying, I mean, I was struck by how I kept thinking about it, like really thinking about the characters deserving better, and thinking about those scenes, and like how, in a vacuum, I really kind of love a lot of the scenes. From the get-go, just the walking through the ashes, I thought was extremely powerful. It was sort of like, it reminded me of what the show used to be a lot.
Yeah.
You know, looking at real effects of something is sort of what made the show cool, right? Is that it took fantasy and it normalized it or grounded it. And this was the first time in a while where we saw that.
I mean, it's like, to your point earlier about like spectacle, like you can see a giant dragon going through the sky, but just seeing someone like sort of just dazed and completely like burned and sort of hopeless, it's way more impactful.
Yeah, I mean, because look, we've at this point, it's kind of like there's nothing that I'll see on like that's computer generated that is gonna astound me, right?
Yeah,
because I've seen the world blow up like 100 times now. You know, like through different movies or shows, or, you know, it's just like what we keep coming back to, I think, and kind of, I guess, why, you know, what compelled us to do this show in the first place and to really think about it was we really cared about the characters, and like time and time again, the shows that people stick with and that they want to following and the characters that they feel like are alive outside of them and that they could feel betrayed by when it sucks, like Lucas and Star Wars and stuff is a real sign to me. It's like a really like positive, hopeful sign that people want connection with each other. Yeah, I mean, like there's been a lot of talk about like already like the camps have sort of formed where you have people who are like, well, there's a waste of 8 years. And I'm definitely in the other camp that's like, yeah, this wasn't like, yeah, they bombed the ending. I think in time I will sort of just remember the best parts of it, these scenes in vacuums, and I'll be okay with that, right? Because I was never the kind of person that like just wanted to see who gets to be on the Iron Throne. You know what I mean? Like that was always such a ridiculous way to enjoy the show for me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it comes back to, I forget what season it was, but that speech that Littlefinger gives to Varys about who gets to sit in the throne and that it's all about the climb, right? And
I mean, yeah, in a lot of ways it is just about the journey.
It's just the journey, for sure.
Honestly, at this point, putting my feelings about this season aside, it didn't matter to me who really sat on the throne ultimately. It just mattered to me that everyone got sort of a fitting end.
Right.
A lot of characters did get a good ending, you know? I can't really say the same about Jon what the, I mean, I wanted him to go north maybe, but now not on these terms. But
that's it, right? So that's where the sort of the prevailing feeling right now is that it's the right ending, but it doesn't make sense how he got there. That it should have been something that he, people, and I agree with this too. I mean, it's sort of, it seemed like the logical thing is that he gets offered the throne for killing Daenerys. And that just was, that's such a no-brainer that the fact that they didn't do it is really curious more than anything.
Well, you know, they love to, as they say, subvert expectations / logic. But I mean, that's the thing too. Like, that's a great point, because even in Dany dying, if she had died another way, like say if she had somehow sacrificed herself with people of King's Landing because of like wildfire or something, if there had been some other reason for her death that was sort of more about her realizing that she needs to sacrifice herself to, you know, ultimately break the wheel as she was so determined to do, that would have been much more fitting than the sort of like weird, crazy twist of character that they just seemed to really force upon us. I mean, Sansa being Queen of the North, sure, whatever, I guess she deserves it. Did we like the way she got there by sort of sucking this entire season? Not really. Did we like that Tyrion stayed Hand of the King? Yeah, that makes sense. Do we like how he was brought out in chains, gave a speech, decided who was king, and then became Hand of the King? No. So there's like a bunch of things that like ultimately are, am I that upset the way like things landed? Not really. I'm just more upset about the convoluted fucking walk we took to get there, which this episode was all about walks, if you guys noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even mind that as much, really. It's like, at this point, it's such a, man, you know, how about the fact that the dragon, like, why doesn't it just, you know, I think the older show would have had the dragon just burn down the whole room, and then the throne melts, de facto.
And Jon walks out, like, unburned.
Well, he walks out because he, like, knows he can walk out, right? But the fact that the dragon, like, only burns down the chair, I mean, it's just such a... there's just so many curious decisions that kind of defeat the purpose of the scenes. But I was just thinking about, you know, this idea of like subversion. What's cool, I think, about the show, or like what has always been a testament to Benioff and Weiss, or maybe like Martin, right? Maybe this actually goes back to Martin. Mm-hmm. Is that the surprises always made sense?
Yeah.
They were the sort of like, I may have mentioned this before, but I had this like high school English teacher who, he had this one great thing about that I took with me regarding endings, and he said an ending should be surprising yet inevitable, right? So that when it happens, you're surprised, but not because the writer has played a trick on you or like led you down a path that they were actually never going to follow.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is so that the story is so strong that they can show you their hand, and still you convince yourself that it can't happen that way because you don't want it to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like the Red Wedding. I mean, it was so obvious that Robb Stark didn't keep his promise to Walder Frey, who is fickle to begin with. And it was so clear that everyone's plotting against the Starks. Like, that was a heartbreaking scene, but also, like, we were shocked, but everything made sense. You know, like, you could logically see the whole path of, like, well, what Rob should have done differently, not like what the show should have done differently,
right? You
know? And that's a huge difference, like being able to say like a character's motives are so clear and so true to who they are as a character that you can, it's not about the writing just seems to be representative of what the character would actually do. And that's why I think a lot of frustrations were this season.
You know, definitely the special effects went kind of down on this one, very flat. You could kind of see that the matte paintings are all there. They really look green screen. Now, you know, these shots of these water bottles have come out too. There's, you know,
we know it has gone up. Costumes, they're killing it.
Killing it, costumes. Yeah, I mean, it's like for every, I think like it was just such a, it was such a fully realized show before, that now it's really a matter of really strong things and really negative things. And it sort of like averages out to a good time. But that's such a different experience than the show that it used to be.
Yeah, it's become some sort of like weird action blockbuster,
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. And I feel like the problem is that this show also, I mean, with a lot of things, like when your favorite band sort of gets famous, when you get a lot of money, you start losing sight of what you were really about, and things fall through the cracks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people our age, we call that selling out.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. They definitely sold out.
And, yeah, and maybe they did, right? I mean, it's in a couple of years, sort of, as, like, the Game of Thrones industry takes off, whether anything makes a playback or, you know, whether things start, and any of the sequels, or they start referencing this. I mean, there's a couple, like, to me, there's, like, a couple things that were unforgivable in this episode, like Sam writing the book.
Oh my God! Yes. Oh wow! I really managed to block that out of my memory.
That's yeah, crazy. I did too. I do too. It's like I do too when I think about the things that I really like about, you know what I mean? But that kind of makes it unrewatchable for me. Also, you know, it's like I kind of just have to, like, I could rewatch the first 5 seasons probably and be so into it and, like, you know, look at the, like, watch the scenes of Sir Davos with the sex pirate, or like all these random things, like the Arya meeting the what's his name, the guy from the house,
Jaqen H'ghar.
Yeah, like that's such a great period of the show for me.
One of my favorite scenes is actually when Margaery walks in her brother and his boyfriend, and it's like the greatest scene because she just. Natalie Dormer just, like, goes through all these emotions of, like, being sort of, like, annoyed, sort of aroused, sort of, like, playful. It's, like, such a great scene, like, so simple, and it took nothing but her just entering this room. And that's the kind of things I miss about this show.
Totally. Totally. And, you know, when the stakes got so high, you know, they kind of let go of certain things, but I don't think they needed to. You know, that's the weird part. It's just, like, There's so much strange decision making here, and obviously, you know, we don't need to get into every plot hole or like every setup that just gets abandoned, because there's too many to count, really, right? It's like,
I mean, really, all of them got abandoned.
All of them, right? Actually, all of them.
I'm trying to think of one that went through, and actually, like none.
And that cheapens it. And I, you know, I just think, like, in my head, I'm already building the better version of how we get there, right? So, for example. I'm thinking, okay, well, the Jon killing Daenerys the way he does, and the talk, I love the speech that Tyrion gives him beforehand, because I think it's like a very wise look at how evil is committed, right? Like, always in the name of righteousness. I really liked that whole scene, and I liked the way he was playing Jon, like, you know, revealing to John, forcing John to really to deal with it. But, you know, that would have been so much stronger if we had had 2 or 3 episodes of John being by Daenerys' side as she got progressively crazier, but was like, yeah, but we're in this together, right? So that he's a little bit more complicit, right? The fact that he just, like, it's just the speed. I mean, there's really not too much to say about it. The whole thing is just rushed.
I think, yeah, to that point, I mean, his turn away from her, just finding out that she was his aunt, which is so unrealistic and so forced, and it would have been much more natural for him to be sort of...
obsessed with her.
Reluctant, but still sort of like, you know.
Oh, I mean, but it would have made so much more sense if he was like, yeah, we're ruling together. I'm your number two. I don't love what you're doing right now, but, like, okay, I'll try and see the bigger picture that you're painting, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll do it because, you know, our sex is awesome. And, like, that's such a more believable place to take it than the fact that, like, yeah, because he just found out that, I mean, it's like, you know, not to get totally off track here, but there's this thing, like, called genetic sexual attraction, right? And it's this real phenomena that happens with people who are either siblings or, like, parents and children who are separated at birth, mm-hmm. and then they meet as adults, and there's like a high frequency of them, of these people who get reconnected, and they develop a sexual relationship. And it's because, like, you know, people aren't habituated to think of each other as family in that way, and yet they have this deep love for them, right? And so it's
that gets convoluted and turns to turn something else.
Fest as sexual attraction, because as an adult, that's sort of how we're trained to show love, right? So, you know, the inverse of that is like, well, this guy has never internalized being Aegon Targaryen, and if he has, we haven't seen it. So it does not make sense then to see him having internalized it so much that he's now put off by this relationship with her, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just a sort of, I think, people are very confused by that being something that switches her, you know? And they use it to switch her. I mean,
that's also so infuriating. It's sort of like they make it all come down to if John had just liked Dany, she wouldn't be so crazy. Like, which is so cheap for her as a character. When has she ever cared about a man? Never.
Yeah. And in fact, her reason for doing it, you know, if all the pieces like in the seasons previous and like her like premonition of what happens, if mm-hmm. those had, like, that was enough groundwork, that was fine, you know, I would have bought it if in these last couple episodes she started just realizing that she started tactically thinking that, you know what, fear is really the only way to get through these people. And all these townspeople are just gonna, they're just gonna, like, be still quietly, let's say, they're gonna be quietly loyal to Lannister, so we're just gonna level this city. Mm-hmm. If she had shown some sort of strategy to this, and that it's her natural belief that what she's doing is spreading good, and, you know, it's kind of the, you know, it takes breaking a couple eggs to make an omelet kind of thing, then Tyrion's speech would also make more sense to Jon. It's like the words he said were all correct and the scene works really well, but not when you add it up, you know, to where it has to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and when we get to Dany's speech in the throne room right before Jon kills her, I think that was definitely a speech that was too little too late. If we had gotten that speech like two episodes ago, about how she really felt. Like, I never really got that she was willing to do this to, in some ways, cleanse the city. And if we had gotten, like you said, like, any other strategy or plan or hint towards this, it would have felt less weird. Mm-hmm. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be, I don't know, I'll think of it fondly.
Are you gonna watch any of the spinoffs?
I'm sure I will. I mean, I'm sure I'll give them a shot. I'm skeptical just because I think with so many different spinoffs coming out, I think it's starting to become kind of what Marvel is, which is just sort of like a toy factory. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, when a show is new and it just is being made for the love of being made for the story, then it's serving a different master than a show that is part of a bigger, like, business venture, you know?
Yeah, that is definitely my feelings of, like, we kind of see what happens when they have no book material to go off of. The show really suffered from that. So clearly now having literally, there's nothing. There's one Targaryen book and, like, the Tales of Duncan Egg for them to go off of. But it doesn't look like they're even going off those books anyway. So I don't know really who's guiding the helm as far as, like, in the writer's room. So that's the thing that really worries me. As far as, like, you know, the budget's going to be there, of course, from HBO. They probably are just going to reuse a bunch of the same props. Who knows? But I'm really concerned about the storytelling. And honestly, with the way, like, shows like Westworld have gone, I don't know. This maybe has proven that HBO really can't handle big budget shows like this.
Yeah.
Without, like, you know, tested material, that HBO really doesn't know what they're doing.
I mean,
what other show of this magnitude has HBO really put out, you know, like, of the same budget and scale and sort of, like, intent, you know, and managed to finish it off well?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, if they knew what they were doing this long, and you know.
But I feel like they didn't. They didn't know what they were doing. They had the books, and then past that, now it's clear they don't. When Westworld, for example, they had the book that was written and the first Westworld movie that was made.
Oh yeah.
Look what happened with season two, and it's now the season coming out. I have no faith in this show.
Yeah, I mean, but Westworld was always trash.
I mean, you can argue that it was less trash in the first season, but I'm just saying, like, it's, if anything, proving further that without a book, without a literal guide, HBO and their team cannot navigate these big budget shows with complex stories. I mean, you have awesome shows like Insecure and, you know, things like The Wire and like The Sopranos, which are, to be fair, not, they're smaller in scale, not necessarily in story impact, but in something that is a little bit more manageable. And they have, I think, great writers on those shows as well. I mean, don't forget, this is a network that brought you Entourage and Ballers. So don't come at me acting like they're, you know, putting out grade A content. No offense to Entourage and Ballers, but you know what I mean.
No, much offense to them. No, I mean, I don't know. I'm not even thinking about, like, HBO as any sort of, I mean.
The people signing off don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're really that different than any other network in that sense. I don't know. There's a couple images in that episode that are always going to stick with me. Like, obviously, when Daenerys walks out and the dragon's wings come up behind her. That's really, really quite incredible. There's a lot to like in there, you know. It's just, it was the first episode also where I started getting tired of a couple of characters. Like Tyrion, and you know, and it's just sort of like,
wow, they really made Tyrion monologue the whole episode.
Yeah, but it was just kind of like, you know what, let's just, okay, if you're not going to end this right, let's just end it. Let's just end it now before I start disliking all these people.
That small council meeting. I'm like, why is Bronn, I'm so tired of Bronn. I'm so tired of Sam. I'm so tired of everyone in that room, except for Sir Davos at this point.
But it's sort of like, yeah, okay, if they're not going to care about it, I'm not going to, you know what I mean? I'm not going to care about it at this point. Yeah.
I really felt bad for the actors in that scene and the scene where Bran becomes king, because I can't.
Notice.
Delivering those lines was painful for me.
Do me a favor and watch, what's the name of John Aaron's son in this?
Robin.
Rewatch the scene and just look at Robin, the guy who plays Robin Aaron, act. It's dreadful. Just watch him through those scenes. It's like a bad background actor, you know, who's like hamming it up and trying to, he gets one line through it, but the rest is just him sort of responding, and it is rough. This has become a show that does not care about the real scenes of its characters, you know?
Let's leave this off with one of our, maybe our favorite Game of Thrones memory.
For me, it's always the best. No, it's Jaime in the hot tub with Brienne. Okay. Him telling his version of things is, like, to me, everything. Everything about the show. That's good.
My favorite, one of my favorite things that I always remember is, oh, there's so many. Probably when Joffrey gets poisoned.
Huh.
Because that was amazing. Because you don't know, inevitable. But when it happens, I remember being on the edge of my seat, just being like, oh my God, they're not going to give this to us. They're not going to give this to us. And they did. And that was
very satisfying.
That whole wedding was awesome. Yeah. Like, how much of a dick he was. Him, like, setting up that whole play. He was just so petty. Like, it was great. Wow. Those are the days.
Okay, well. R.I.P. Game of Thrones.
R.I.P. Well, thank you so much, guys, for listening. Catch us around on some other FilmCore podcasts. Greg, thank you so much for jumping on these with me throughout the years.
You got it.
And we'll catch you guys next time.